Broadcasting Network. I'm Tom Porter, and for Thursday, August 21st, this is Maine Things Considered. Democrats cry foul over an attack ad targeting Mike Mishu in his bid for governor. How some Mainers are tapping into the trend of offering short-term room rentals online.
We just started testing it out last summer, and within a week we were already getting bookings for the end of the summer, September, October.
And our summer side trip series takes us to Fort Fairfield, to a museum that takes visitors back to the time of the so-called Aroostook War. Those stories and more coming up, but first this news. This is Maine Things Considered. I'm Tom Porter. Maine Democrats are asking the Republican Party to retract campaign mailers that they say falsely accused Democratic gubernatorial candidate Mike Mishu of sponsoring a bill 12 years ago that laid the groundwork for the loss of jobs at Great Northern Paper. As A.J. Higgins reports, the GOP's position is complicated by the fact that the party's current chairman, Rick Bennett, was the president of the Senate when the unanimous vote was taken.
With layoff notices pending and the Great Northern Paper Mill in Millinocket facing an uncertain future, Mishu says it's the wrong time for Maine Republicans to be politicizing an economic disaster for Northern Maine.
It's so despicable just to see this attack. The emotions of the people that worked in those mills, just unbelievable what they're doing today. And this is the type of politics that Mainers are tired of.
Mishu is referring to a flyer paid for by the Maine Republican Party that attributes current problems at the mill to legislation sponsored by Mishu when he was a state senator in 2002. Mishu, a former East Millinocket mill worker himself, was president pro tem of the Maine Senate at that time, and the legislation was passed unanimously in the Senate without debate. The bill was an attempt to keep the mill functional by allowing the owner to sell its dams and hydroelectric power stations. It also included a provision that prevented companies from shutting down production in order to sell the electricity generated by the dams. It was signed into law by then-Governor Angus King. Mishu defends the legislation as the right response at that moment in time.
When we did pass the legislation, we did exactly what we had to do to protect the jobs at Great Northern Paper Company. And we did it with strong bipartisan support. Rick Bennett knows that. He was president of the Senate at the time, and he supported it because it saved jobs and kept Mainers working.
You know, I think that if I had made a similar bill to help my local community and it turned out to be a failure, I should be held accountable for that.
12 years ago, Rick Bennett was the president of the Maine Senate, and today he is the state chair of the Maine Republican Party. Bennett says the provision of the bill that prevented the company from selling electricity turned out to be short-sighted and was later corrected by a bipartisan vote of the current legislature. Bennett says he and other state senators relied on Mishu to provide direction on the mill issue and that the under-the-hammer vote in the Senate reflected the degree of faith they placed in his judgment.
In this case, it turned out to be injurious. It turned out to kill jobs, and I think it's very legitimate to raise it in that context.
Jill Goldthwaite, who was the independent Senate chair of the Appropriations Committee from Bar Harbor in 2002, supported Bennett's version of the Senate discussion, saying it was not uncommon for other members to defer to the senator from the region of interest when taking votes on emerging policy matters. But she also said Republicans failed to challenge Mishu at that time.
It's true that generally the caucuses go over every bill and decide what position they're going to take, and they, for whatever reason, they decided at that time that they were not going to object to it. So it does seem a bit strange that they're objecting now.
Mishu says that as angry as he is that Republicans are trying to blame him for the mill's current economic woes, he's actually more disappointed in Bennett for failing to tell the whole story behind the bill.
I know he has his job that he's got to do, but for the Republican Party to send out a mailer that's misleading and false just shows what this campaign's going to be about.
Bennett stands by the mailer, saying voters have a right to know how much of an understanding Mishu has of the private sector economy and the forces that shape it. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
It's 5:39. Still to come, Maine innkeepers express frustration at new competitors offering short-term room rentals online. And a museum in Fort Fairfield that brings the time of the Aroostook War to life.
And up here we call it the bloodless Aroostook War because there was no one killed or no one injured during the war.
This is Maine Things Considered.
With this roundup of other Maine news, I'm Ed Morin. A Maine native is leaving his job at the Republican Governors Association to return to his home state to lead a conservative advocacy group. Matthew Gagne will assume his duties as CEO of the Maine Heritage Policy Center effective September 1st. Gagne says he wants to shift the agency's focus from policy development to become more proactive on state issues.
I think there's a lot of potential to help find and activate and organize the conservative activist base to actually get those policies that we advocate accomplished.
Gagne has been involved in Maine and national politics for more than a decade. He served as director of digital strategy of the RGA for the past 3 years. He previously worked in the office of Senator Susan Collins and with the National Republican Senatorial Committee. He's also been a columnist for the Bangor Daily News. Former CEO J. Scott Moody left the conservative think tank in April to lead Virginia-based State Budget Solutions. State Attorney General Janet Mills says a Cumberland County Sheriff's deputy was justified in shooting and killing a man last April in Windham. Mills says Nicholas Mangino was acting in self-defense and for others when he shot Stephen McKinney. McKinney was shot after refusing to drop a gun and advancing toward Mangino. Sales of single-family homes in Maine, along with the median sales price, were up modestly in July compared to the year before. The Maine Association of Realtors is reporting that Maine home sales saw a 2% increase last month. The median price increased 1.4% to $181,500. Maine Association of Realtors President Angela Levesque says it appears that the market is steadying.
There's a lot of new inventory hitting the market. And usually this time of year, we don't necessarily have that fresh inventory. So people that are looking to buy, great inventory to choose from right now, and interest rates are still low.
Nationally, home sales saw a 4% drop in July, while the national median sales price was up just over 5%. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is proposing to require the sale of so-called reformulated gasoline in several Maine counties beginning in June. The proposal is in response to Maine's request to opt into the program. Keith Shortall reports.
Reformulated gasoline, or RFG, is blended to reduce chemicals that cause smog and other pollution. It's required in cities with high smog levels, but it's optional elsewhere. The EPA is proposing that Maine require the blend in seven counties: York, Cumberland, Sagadahoc, Androscoggin, Kennebec, Knox, and Lincoln. The agency is soliciting comments about whether there will be enough capacity to supply those counties with RFG by a June 1st deadline. The program is part of amendments enacted to the Clean Air Act in 1990 and is being phased in. For MPBN News, I'm Keith Shortall.
Despite some significant winter deer damage at a few orchards and more hail damage than usual in parts of the state, experts expect an excellent apple crop this year with good size and color. Humane tree fruit specialist Renee Moran says most people who pick their own apples will not see much hail damage. Moran says the majority of apple farms in Maine see a significant portion of their incomes coming from pick-your-own and retail farm stand sales.
For the pick-your-own harvest, I think the quality of the fruit is going to be very good this year. Where the severe hail damage occurred was not a pick-your-own orchard. It was a block of Honeycrisp apples that normally go to the supermarket.
Moran says pick-your-own has started in southern Maine with summer varieties. She says activity picks up after Labor Day, with the Maine harvest starting the second week of September in southern Maine. The harvest moves north through the state into October. For MPBN News, I'm Ed Morin.
This is Maine Things Considered. I'm Tom Porter. Hoteliers, innkeepers, and municipal officials in Maine and across the country are facing serious competition from a recent explosion in private short-term online vacation rentals. The main player is the website Airbnb, based in Portland, Oregon, which helps homeowners market their property, mostly for short-term vacations. More than 11 million guests have traveled with Airbnb since the company was founded in 2008. It now operates in more than 190 countries. Some of the biggest growth in the U.S. recently has been in Maine. Bookings in the state's biggest city, for example, are up nearly 330% this year, making Portland the fourth most popular U.S. destination for travelers.
We're on top of Montjoy Hill. We're facing the observatory. We have views from the Back Cove of Mount Washington all the way around to the harbor, and we can actually see...
Stephanie Dunn and her husband Mark Smith rent out their two-bedroom, two-and-a-half-bathroom, 1,600-square-foot apartment using Airbnb and another website called Vacation Rental by Owner, or VRBO. The place, which costs $380 a night during the peak season, is on the top of a four-story building and offers panoramic views of the area. Dunn and Smith themselves occupy another apartment in the building, which they own. Dunn says they renovated the apartment and began renting it out last year.
We just started testing it out last summer, and within a week we were already getting bookings for the end of the summer, September, October. Every weekend has been full this summer and most weekdays as well, and we're now booked through October.
The rapid growth of sites like Airbnb has prompted serious concern in some quarters. Greg Dougal says what's happening in Portland is mirrored in tourist destinations across the state.
The biggest issue that we have is the fact that, you know, it's not a level playing field.
Dougal is executive director of the Maine Innkeepers Association. The problem, he says, is that Airbnb-type bookings are mostly just for one, two or three nights, meaning they take business away from hotels and bed and breakfasts because most of them don't follow the same codes and regulations. Dougal points out that to offer overnight lodging in Maine, innkeepers have to be licensed and have the appropriate insurance and safety requirements, which includes fire alarms, fire exits, and food preparation certificates, if necessary. They also have to pay lodging tax. Most property owners using sites like Airbnb, he says, are not required to do this.
My people are making these sizable investments in their properties because they're required to by law, and other people are just basically, you know, doing this Friday and Saturday night thing and not adhering to any regulations.
I like to think that it's just a trend and that people are going to get tired of having strangers in their house, you know.
Christy Bifulco owns the Camden Wynwood House Bed and Breakfast. In a popular coastal destination like Camden, she says there's a lot of competition in the lodging industry. And while Airbnb properties may not undercut legitimate hotels and inns on the price they offer, they often do when it comes to amenities.
I actually had an Airbnb owner call me to say that she had a double booking on Airbnb and if I could take it. And I said, well, yes, I actually do have a room available for that evening. And she said, well, they're going to expect a microwave, a refrigerator, and use of the kitchen. And I said, well, I can't compete with that. I have a room. It's like, you know, a room with a bed. And so she called the client and told them that they wouldn't have these extra amenities and they wouldn't book with me.
Some towns and cities, meanwhile, are beginning to tighten up their ordinances governing private rentals. In Camden, town officials have started to enforce a rule requiring a 7-night minimum stay for private rentals. And in nearby Rockland, city officials have a similar proposal in the works. Frank Isgenitis is co-owner of the historic Lime Rock Inn in Rockland. He also sits on the city council.
The city is looking to take a position that if you're renting all or part of your property in an increment of less than 7 nights, you know, essentially nightly, you are a lodging property. And so that at a minimum, there will be a standard for a license requirement, an annual inspection, and proper registration with the state.
In Portland, Oregon, where Airbnb's headquarters are, city officials recently agreed to legalize short-term rentals as long as a permit is purchased and lodging tax paid. In Portland, Maine, city spokeswoman Jessica Grondin says the legality of short-term private rentals is a vague area that hasn't really been a problem in the past.
But given the recent popularity, our planning staff has begun discussing how zoning might apply to this use in various parts of the city. Understandably, the code didn't predict this use when it was first written, so it's in a bit of a gray zone. We may propose changes to the zoning code in the future if more clarity is needed.
Downtown property owners Mark Smith and Stephanie Dunn, who privately rent out an apartment on Munjoy Hill, insist they are not violating any ordinances. That's because the building, although residential, is not zoned as such, says Smith, because it's a four-story, four-unit structure.
That puts us into commercial building code. So we have a full fire sprinkler system. I mean, the alarm system communicates with the fire department the same way that a hotel or something like that would. And that's unrelated to us doing any kind of short-term rentals. Yeah. That was just building code. We are a commercial building.
But he admits hotels may have a legitimate gripe when it comes to smaller residences offering short-term vacation rentals that are not zoned for commercial use. Airbnb declined to comment for this story. There are lots of reasons to take a trip to Aroostook County. Pretty scenery, poutine, and Canada is just minutes away. But for some history buffs, the town of Fort Fairfield is an essential stop because of a border dispute that flared up in the late 1830s. At the centre of that conflict stood the town's blockhouse fort. While the original structure was mostly dismantled, the old fort was restored about 40 years ago and now serves as a museum. Jennifer Mitchell takes us there for our next summer side trip.
The Fort Fairfield blockhouse, with its fat, square, rough-hewn timbers, sits right in the middle of town on a busy street. Logging trucks blare past, and there's a steady stream of cars heading back and forth across the New Brunswick border, which is less than a mile away. Everything seems busy and good-natured in Fort Fairfield, but 200 years ago, this was a frontier spot, and at the epicenter of a tense conflict known as the Aroostook War.
And up here we call it the Bloodless Aroostook War because there was no one killed or no one injured during the war.
That's Frontier Heritage Historical Society member Bill Finlan, who takes care of the blockhouse and opens it by appointment only. He says while no shots were fired during the Aroostook War, tempers on both sides flared between 1838 and 1842 over one important resource, lumber. And those tensions had started decades before. Prior to the Boston Tea Party, there was an event called the Pine Tree Riot, where northern New Englanders rose up in protest over an English rule that reserved the tallest, straightest trees, so-called King's Pines, for the crown. But following the Revolutionary War and then the War of 1812, it still wasn't clear who owned what.
The line between the United States and Canada wasn't defined. The Canadians were coming up the river, cutting the timber, floating it down, and of course they wanted the big King's Pine to make their masts and send them over to England.
But the Americans wanted access to the same pines, so they took to stringing heavy chains across the Aroostook River to stop the logs from reaching Canada. There's one of these on display at the museum.
You notice how it's all pitted and so forth. It was found down on the river bank and donated to the Historical Society. So it's a neat piece. To be able to find something, you know, original that goes back that far.
While such disputes are now settled through trade negotiations, perhaps with the odd act of civil disobedience, the American government back then responded by building a fort on the river from those coveted King's Pines and staffing it with an armed militia. Fortunately, the whole affair was brought to a peaceful close in 1842 with the signing of a treaty that finally established a permanent border. It's a short chapter in the history books that the rest of the world may have barely skimmed, but for history buffs like Walter Grant of Calgary, Alberta, it's one of the most exciting stops on his summer road trip.
So I drove down last Wednesday to Little Bighorn, and then I traversed across the upper states and went to Gettysburg and spent the last few days there. So it's just been a great experience. I came up here to actually see this. Out of all the forts that I was looking online, this is the one I wanted to see.
Grant, who describes himself as a military history enthusiast, says it's not that easy to find a blockhouse fort to tour outside the Northeast.
The structure itself is unique, and it's amazing that it could house, I think he said it could garrison, what, 50 guys here? So that was fascinating in itself, that you put 50 guys in a place like this. So.
but Dawn Finland, who cares for the blockhouse along with her husband, is quick to point out that the collections inside go well beyond military history and into the realms of daily civilian life. She's arranged the upstairs of the fort to show more of the home utilities that people would have used over the last 200 years, from donut turners to cookstoves. The collection also features an original table that the troops garrisoned in Fort Fairfield would have used. And she says they're working on a new display that details the birth of the electronic age, from record albums to computers.
There was a little boy come in, and he looked at one of those thick, big records, and he went over to his mother and he said, "Mom, come see the biggest CD you ever saw." So, you know, it's good for him to know what life was and how it has changed.
For MPBN News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
To find out more about the blockhouse, contact the Frontier Heritage Historical Society in Fort Fairfield. There are contact links at visitaroostook.com. It's approaching 5 minutes before six now, time to check on the weather with Paul Cousins.
A subtle disturbance aloft will encourage clouds to expand and lower across all but northeastern Maine tonight, where a few stars will become visible. Along the western Maine border, a few showers will continue to evolve. Low temperatures near 50 far north, upper 50s Portland south. Tomorrow, sunshine will be limited throughout the county. Expect scattered light rain showers throughout the remainder of the state, perhaps most notable during the afternoon, Brunswick south. Upper 60s to upper 70s, actually warmest far north, coolest at the coast. Saturday, there will be areas of morning fog, especially along the shore, Rockland south, and then high pressure will shoulder into Maine from Quebec. Clouds will slowly peel away, most tenacious along the New Hampshire border, where an afternoon shower or two is possible. Highs in the middle to upper 70s, near 70 at the beaches. It will be much brighter Sunday. Mostly sunny, upper 70s to low 80s, cooler at the coast. Unseasonable late summer warmth will creep into Maine early next week. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
That's Maine Things Considered for this Thursday, August 21st. We had production help from Susan Sharon and Barbara Caridi. I'm Tom Porter. Thanks for listening.